Hello, welcome to Poorly Informed, Slightly More Informed, Brexit Does Theo. I was reporting on Brexit, but it now feels like Brexit is dragging me around like a dead thing, the nightmare that it is. But it's important that we keep abreast of it, understand what's going on, and hopefully this episode will unpack everything that's happened since May 2019, when I last did an episode, and break that down. Be a little bit of a recap. And so I've broken this into four phases just to make kind of structure a bit easier. And it also means you can jump around if there's things you know about and you're just here to think about general election or Johnson becoming leader, then you can jump around and listen to those bits separately. If you need to pause at any point as well, there's a lot to take in. So do feel like you can hit that pause button and just take a moment to work it out or replay a section. So we've got to cover quite a lot of stuff. European elections, Johnson becoming leader, Johnson programming Parliament, getting a deal, and the general election, of course, which for many of us is the first general election we can vote in, which is very exciting. Just want to apologise also for the sound quality, because I am in a student room with thin walls and a nice view of the main square of Lancaster University. Which, as I say, nice view, lots of drunk students as well. So if you hear a little bit of raucousness, then that's what that is. But I think on with the show that is Brexit, and be fortified by the knowledge that in a few years, Netflix will make a really good series on Brexit, like The Crown, but with more drama. So I'm Theo. Welcome to Brexit Does Theo. Hope you enjoy. So we left Brexit in May 2019, just before the European elections. Whew. So the European elections, that was quite a night, really. So the Conservatives are traditionally a big broad church party. So on the far right, on the right wing, you've got a lot of Eurosceptics. And on the left wing, you've got a lot of Europhiles, people who like the EU. So the Liberal Democrat Party and the Brexit Party pounced on Theresa May's weak leadership and the Conservative failure to hammer out a clear policy. Liberal Democrats swept the board in terms of Remain voting, you know, a party that wants Remain second referendum, and Brexit Party got all the hard Brexiteers. Just a quick notice as well, obviously I'm breaking down some of these terms and concepts, but if your Brexit is, I don't know, a little rusty, or if you're trying to go right from the start and understand what's going on, I'd recommend you go to the previous two episodes. They're really good for building from the start up, where I go through a lot of the key concepts and key terms in detail. Here, I'm not going to take such liberties. We're going to try and move through the content rather than picking up every single important idea. So if you're not sure about something, please do check those out. I had quite a lot of fun making them. And let me know what you think on Instagram or Twitter. Our handles are in the description. But regardless, back to the European elections. So you've got, so Theresa May knew the Conservatives would be hammered in the EU elections. How could it be otherwise? And so she wanted to leave the European Union, if you remember, on the 31st of March. She failed, and so she had to take part in the European elections, which, as I've already specified, was a disaster. This was to elect regional representatives to the EU Council. And Theresa May felt the defeat was so crushing that the next morning she resigned as Prime Minister, as leader of the Conservative Party, until a new leader of the Conservative Party was elected. And immediately Boris Johnson sprang to the forefront of the race. He was a bookie's favourite. He's got the charisma, the election campaigning, and, you know, he turns a phrase, and that convinced the 160,000 Tory party members he could deliver Brexit, and he won. He beat Jeremy Hunt convincingly. Interestingly, Jeremy Hunt has been very quiet. Must look into that. But the former Foreign Secretary and Mayor of London on the 24th of July, and I can remember watching this with Peter, who's another podcast member, this result, and just thinking, you know, what does this mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. We now know. That was how many months ago? And so in his first speech, he promised to work flat out for the new deal. Now, the second phase begins here. So over the summer, Johnson attempts to get a deal with varying degrees of effort. You know, on the one hand, you might think he was absolutely going for it. On the other hand, you might think he was kicking back and getting some sun. But what was really significant is he played up his commitment to do or die in a ditch, 31st of October as the leaving date. But that was only a couple of months ago and he didn't look like he was going to be getting a new deal anytime soon. So a lot of people began to become quite concerned. A no-deal exit from the EU was gaining traction and it's still quite a popular idea. And I think it's quite important, I mentioned this in the first episode, but a no-deal is not a positive thing. It gets a lot of attention because it's mentally quite satisfying. Clean break from the EU, put it all behind us and move on. But a no-deal essentially means none of the EU laws that are our laws are copied over. None of the European Union agreements are copied over. We would have nothing to replace the Good Friday Agreement in Ireland, which ended decades of sectarian conflict. There'd be a 10% price increase on exports, which would destroy small businesses and job losses. There'd be no rules governing aviation, medicine, radioactive materials, immigration. We simply wouldn't have any laws because all of our laws have been subcontracted to the European Union. I'm exaggerating slightly, but a lot of critical border security, military and policing law would no longer exist, right? So what do you do? No one knows really what would happen after a no deal, but we do know that it's like just fighting a battle in some foreign country and saying screw this, I'm out, and trying to find your own way home. It's not that Britain is part of this unit, and until we can negotiate an orderly exit from this unit, there's no way you can just walk out and sever ties. That's not an option that should be on the table, despite how mentally satisfying it is. I mean, you might ask, well, why not just copy all those laws over from the EU? Well, that's a great idea, but part of the reason why we voted to leave the EU was to get rid of a lot of those laws. The fisheries agreement, agriculture agreement, we don't want those. So we have to decide what laws we want to keep and what laws we want to junk. And that is partly what the deal does. It establishes our relationship, which laws we should keep and which laws we can get rid of in a future relationship with the EU. So we have to have a deal or it's a no deal. There's no kind of halfway house. Just to clear that up. So I cannot emphasise strongly enough, objectively, a no deal is not a good... It would not be a positive experience. Right, so there's the fears over a no deal. Right, Lib Dems and the Labour Party are getting pretty ants in their pants about it. And suddenly, Johnson, over summer, says... I'm not going to do the voice, sorry. Johnson says, I will prorogue Parliament for 4 weeks to allow my government to restart and be refreshed. Well, yeah, that's reasonable enough, sort of. A new Prime Minister will often prorogue Parliament for a few days, just to kind of, it's almost like a mental and emotional breathing space to take a step back and then to step forward to the plate again with all these new ideas and new plans, and you have a Queen's speech. However, it's not normal that you prorogue Parliament for 4 weeks. It's not normal that you do it in the middle of a constitutional crisis, which Brexit is, because the rules that govern our government and monarchy are being infringed and being stretched. And we're approaching a crisis point where a lot of these things don't work anymore. But that is probably another slightly more informed episode. But Parliament, understandably, weren't particularly happy. Johnson's thinking was essentially, and you are free to make your own opinion on this, actually. Johnson's thinking was, look, if Parliament blocks a no deal, which it looks like they were going to do, then that means the EU knows I have to go for a deal and they will drive me for the hardest terms possible. If I have a no deal and I threaten a no deal, which would also be bad for the EU, Britain is quite a big player in the EU, so the EU don't want a no deal. Johnson's thinking was if the EU genuinely thought he was going for a no deal, they would give him better terms to try and encourage him to not leave without a deal. And Johnson thought, well, if Parliament blocks this, and says in some way you must have a deal, then that weakens my bargaining hand. Parliament, on the other hand, were worried that he actually was going for a no deal and that he was taking it very seriously, which you could argue is part of playing a hard hand. But they were also worried that he hadn't come up with much of an alternative. He'd not done a huge amount over summer. So, you are, yeah, please make your own decision on that. I don't want to tell you either which way. But essentially, he probed Parliament, but he staged it for a week after Parliament came back after the summer recess. So, of course, Parliament only went and, in that week, passed a deal blocking no deal, passed a law blocking no deal anyway, which is, I mean, more than anything else, it's legislatively quite impressive. So their deal, which is called the Benn Act, this is the only law you're going to need to remember, the Benn Act, B-E-N-N Act. And this essentially said if there was not a deal by the 31st of October, the government must ask for an extension to the EU. Ouch. That's quite an impressive, more than anything else, it is deeply, it represented a sea change in the way Parliament interacts with Downing Street and the Prime Minister. It showed that Parliament could take control of business in the House of Commons and it could dictate to the executive branch, which is the Prime Minister and his government, or her government, to do what they said. And that's quite significant. A couple of hundred years from now, they will be talking about the Benn Act. They'll probably still be talking about, they'll probably still be trying to do Brexit, but the Benn Act will be one of the most important things you hear about today. It's no longer topically relevant. We've moved past the Benn Act, but it will soon be looked back as a key moment of parliamentary power. But moving on from political theory, a legal challenge was also filed to the Supreme Court saying Boris Johnson had no right to prorogue Parliament, and unanimously, and if you followed any of my social media, you will know this was very exciting. Unanimously, the Supreme Court said, yeah, that was unconstitutional. That was, you deceived the Queen in asking her to prorogue Parliament. A really significant moment again. So you've got two big significant moments to remember. I know we do like our big moments on this podcast. And coincidentally, with the Supreme Court ordering Boris Johnson to reopen Parliament, Boris Johnson came up with a deal, which, isn't that great? Yeah, it's really good that he was able to plough on. It is important to specify he didn't look like producing a deal while Parliament was prorogued for the week that it was. He prorogued Parliament to stop them from getting in the way of his deal-making and to strengthen his hand, but it didn't look like there was much deal-making going on. So, we're on to the third phase, we're on to the actual deal itself, and on the 17th of October, Johnson presented this new and improved package to the Conservative Conference and, more broadly, the country. So, it looked a bit like this, and you might see the similarities with May's deal, and I will go over that. So, the whole of the country will leave the Customs Union, which is the EU's trading network without borders and tariffs and so on. So we will have different trade regulations, we will have a very different relationship, and there will be a legal border on the island of Ireland between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. However, to preserve the Irish peace, this border will not be in fact implemented, okay? So the island of Ireland will function logistically and actually as an island. But to maintain the different trading relationship with the EU, there will be a border down the Irish Sea. That's a phrase that has come up quite a lot. Theresa May was very dependent on her Irish allies, the DUP. But Johnson's majority has collapsed to the point where, frankly, he's not going to get a vote in if 20 Labour rebels defected and backed him. So the DUP are no longer needed. And he has found the nerve to defy them and to split the island of Britain, or the island of Great Britain, and Northern Ireland, which the DUP were deeply opposed to for reasons that I would be in deep trouble for going into. So there is a... There will be spontaneous checks on trading, essentially, is what that looks like. Ships will be spot checked. I'm not a trading expert, I don't know these things, but I'd imagine that ports, there will be more stringent checks and so on. Much will also, however, beyond that, much will stay the same to Theresa May's deal, withdrawal agreement, in that there will be a transition period. So there'll be a couple of years where we negotiate a trade deal with the EU. So while we don't, we wouldn't in that, while the de facto position is a very different trading relationship, the idea is we will be able to negotiate a much more integrated trading relationship so that we have independence from the EU to make our own laws, but in terms of trade, we are closely knitted to the EU. So we have parliamentary sovereignty, which is a big demand of those wanting to leave in the referendum. 3 years ago, wow. Wanted to leave in the referendum. But we also have the economic benefits of the European Union. But then the transition period stays the same. The rights of EU citizens in the UK and UK citizens in the EU will stay the same as in May's deal. And the financial agreement stays the same to the best of my knowledge. So there is a deal, but fears remain from Parliament that they would approve the deal, but Johnson would just not make it into law. He'd just sort of let it float around and leave the EU on the 31st of October anyway. So determined is he to leave. So this would essentially, again, be a no-deal Brexit because you've got this law that just isn't implemented. And also, the government might just want to get the bill through without proper scrutiny and accountability that Parliament is constitutionally mandated to do. He wanted the timetable, which is 3 days. So you've got this big piece of legislation on one of the biggest issues since World War II, and the government wanted to get the bill through and done quite quickly. Parliament didn't approve. So what did they do? Well, they do what Parliament likes to do when they don't trust the government, which is take control of the timetable themselves and make a new law. Hooray! So they make a law forcing the government to implement the deal. That does what it says on the tin, to be honest. And then they pass the deal by about 30 votes, which, compared to the majority Theresa May was getting, it's pretty impressive. But they then rejected the timetable. They still said no. We still don't feel we have enough time to look at the deal, understand its implications, because this is a pretty big change in terms of Northern Ireland that you've made. We approved this deal in principle, but we're not actually going to legislate it in practice. Thus, it cannot become law. So the deal is approved, but it will not be sent back to the EU until after this general election excitement that we are going to have. Which brings us on to the general election and the final phase itself, and probably the most interesting of all the stuff I've had to go to research this. I love it, really, but whew, Brexit stuff is done now. So, the upcoming general election scheduled for the 12th of December. I am recording this the day after Parliament has broken up. Manifestos are being written and released, election campaigns are being launched, Tom Watson stepped down as deputy leader of the Labour Party. Goodness me, I don't know what I'm going to do when it's all over. Probably Christmas, actually, but irrelevant. Boris Johnson has a minority government, which means he has less MPs than all the other parties put together by 20. So he can't pass laws. There's just no way he can pass laws. So he wants an election to get a majority. The Labour Party think that people won't vote to Johnson because he has alienated himself from a lot of the middle class and a lot of the suburbia. So those people back Corbyn to get a majority. Now no deal is off the table, at least for a few months potentially. The Labour Party want an election. They were waiting until no deal was off the table before backing an election. Liberal Democrats and SNP have taken anti-Brexit positions but realise that if a deal is passed and implemented within the extension that the EU has given us, then they will be severely weakened. So they wanted an election so they can get their cards on the table, improve their status and size in Parliament, and have more influence in legislation and policy. So they wanted an election. Parliament voted for an election. in late October, after Boris Johnson had reluctantly sent a request to the EU to give us an extension. So we have until the 31st of January to come up with to pass a deal, to get it all through, yay, leave the EU, and all that jazz. Now, talk about a single-issue election. This, of course, will focus heavily on Brexit, but there may also be an environmental platform emerging, so watch for that. The NHS will be a running issue. The Conservatives, having traditionally been a little bit sceptical of the NHS, are now really heavily backing it. They will also, the Conservatives will explicitly focus on Johnson's deal. So they will take this and they will say, look at this, we've done what, and the implication will be, we've done what Theresa May couldn't do. And they're going to back that up with quite a lot of law and order, policing, you know. I mean, actually, policing is one of the main thrusts of that. The Conservatives are traditionally the party of law and order. They're going to be talking about crime a lot. And there will be an anti-parliamentary rhetoric. Johnson will say, look, there's a parliament that blocks everything I want to do. He's only got one law passed in parliament in 3 or 4 months, and that was the deal. Parliament has blocked everything I want to do. And, you know, I have no freedom, no capability to do anything. Vote the guys out and get a Conservative Party in. There's going to be a lot of that going on. He wants to appeal. The Conservative Party under Johnson knows it has lost middle class, the suburbs, people who are seen as very soft Tory. They'll vote for them without maybe their principles lying in a sort of right wing. And so, to shore this up, Johnson's going to appeal to the working class and blue-collar workers, who often are socially conservative, you know, lots are keen on immigration, is a big part of that, but who have historically voted deeply Labour. And Johnson is banking that they will be able to look past that and focus more on wanting to leave the EU than on the social justice and equality that Corbyn promises. Need I remind you that Johnson has a really bad appreciation favourability rating, but Jeremy Corbyn is polling on -60% for favourability. And if that sounds low, then yeah, it's worse than Trump, Putin, Blair, and the most unpopular, well, second most unpopular Labour leader in history, Michael Foot, in 1984. So Johnson is banking that those people will reject Corbyn and instead turn to him, and that will shore up his losses in Scotland and in the South East. Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party unveiling a sort of sweeping economic left-wing plan, cutting the working week, redistributing profit, nationalising business. So there's quite a lot of interesting and thought-provoking stuff, and we don't perhaps have the time to go into detail on that here. That's not why you're listening, but it is worth having a look at what Jeremy Corbyn is promising. Do your own little bit of research, see what you think, let us know. The Labour Party will go hard in the second referendum. This has been a policy for a while now, and it's one that a lot of the parliamentary Labour Party back very strongly, but Corbyn's probably himself is probably going to be a little bit dragging his feet. He's traditionally a Eurosceptic. He's not a big fan of the EU. And the party, they are banking on younger voters. They're going to try and get that middle class that by emphasising their Brexit policy, which is a referendum on the deal. But that, in my opinion, is going to be limited. And I think they will be relying a lot on younger workers, poor workers. They're going to be wrestling with Johnson for a lot of those working class seats. But they're being squeezed on quite a lot of flanks. Liberal Democrats are cutting into their middle class reach. They're still a legacy from the Blairite days. The Conservatives are undercutting them on working class. And the timing of the vote, which is the 12th of December, is quite awkward for a lot of university students who are traditionally big Labour voters. So that may impact, because they will be returning from universities going home, so that may impact their vote share as well. And this is also a target area for Liberal Democrats, who are trying to get young people and that middle class suburbia, trying to pull in those Remainers, your parents who voted Corbyn in 2017, and who often kind of soft Tories, yellow Tories is the term you might use for them, they don't have the variance that the Conservatives and Labour will go for. They will campaign heavily on Brexit. They believe Remain. They want to revoke Brexit, and that's not going to get them into power. I think they're just trying to get as many seats as possible. But also, critically for the Liberal Democrats, they will spread a lot of vote around the country. They might get several, probably double-figure million votes, and it will convert into a pittance of seats. The crucial vote mark is 25%. If they poll above 25%, that will begin to convert into a lot of seats. And at the moment, they're hovering just below 20%. So a little bit of work needs to be put in by Liberal Democrats. And do they seem capable of reaching that 25% mark? Dunno. And so they're going to focus on Brexit. They're going to talk a lot about the environment. But everything else is just going to be reasonably sort of wishy-washy middle ground. Remains to see whether it'll be convincing. And the Scottish National Party will probably make gains in Scotland, despite a fairly middling 12 years in government. And they're going to be demanding a fresh independence referendum, which, depending on who you listen to, is either the thing that Scots want most in the world, more than deep-fried haggis and, you know, fishing, but or it's the thing they want least in the world, more than another English invasion. So That's going to be a little bit of a curveball, a little bit of a leftward angle on the election. And there's going to be a lot of talk about Labour going into coalition with the SNP after the election, because neither are going to get a majority. The SNP, it's mathematically impossible. And so that will add another dimension. If you hear about a Labour-SNP coalition, that will be the dog whistle under there. Especially the Conservatives will play on this, and they'll be implying, or maybe even explicitly saying, you know, there will be an independence referendum. That will be the condition of a Labour-SNP government. So don't vote for them. So this is, that's something to keep on the back burner. And what, how is this election, this election's going to be a nasty one. It's going to be poisonous, it's going to be sour. There will be some nasty exchanges. The TV debates are just going to be deeply, darkly hilarious. Corbyn up against Johnson, I can't see Corbyn convincingly winning that one. And the result, it doesn't look like either party will secure a majority, because Johnson is probably most likely of the three to get a majority. But he's still not there. And he will have to pull off quite a feat, quite an electoral victory, to get one. And an inconclusive result and the election ending on a whimper rather than a bang is more likely than, you know, a majority government with 100 spare seats winning. It's, so that's why this is going to be such an interesting election, because no party will win, and we will be looking at the possibility of coalition and power broking for the first time since 2010, but also, but before then, for the first time since World War II. And it shows that British politics is reaching a need to break down that first-past-the-post-election system and for parties to come together. But two dislikable main parties, one unimpressive lightweight, and a grumpy Scottish gang. Only a mad fool would try and predict this one. That said, I'm saying it's a Tory minority government with a new election in 3 months. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I had to hash it out very quickly because events are changing so quickly. So apologies if it's already outdated. If you want to get in touch, ask questions, please do get in touch. Our Instagram and Gmail, email, who says Gmail, in the description below. We started season 2, you may have noticed, but we've not really got anywhere with it. We've all gone to university recently, and so time for recording has been a little bit short. Maybe we'll get some episodes out, but I'm afraid it's going to have to be a case of watch this space. Otherwise, which is a bit of a shame, but that's life. But thank you very much for listening. I hope you learned something today, and do get in touch if you have any questions. See you later.